Please open your Bibles to John chapter 6, and I want to read to you the first 14 verses. John chapter 6, we read, "After these things, Jesus went away to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, or Tiberias. A large crowd followed him because they saw the signs which he was performing on those who were sick. Then Jesus went up on the mountain, and there he sat down with his disciples. Now the Passover, the feast of the Jews, was near. Therefore Jesus, lifting up his eyes and seeing that a large crowd was coming to him, said to Philip, 'Where are we to buy bread so that these may eat?' This he was saying to test him, for he himself knew what he was intending to do. Philip answered him, 200 denarii worth of bread is not sufficient for them, for everyone to receive a little.' One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, 'There is a lad here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what are these for so many people?' Jesus said, 'Have the people sit down.' Now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down in number about 5,000. Jesus then took the loaves, and having given thanks, he distributed to those who were seated, likewise also of the fish, as much as they wanted. When they were filled, he said to the disciples, 'His disciples, gather up the leftover fragments so that nothing will be lost.' So they gathered them up and filled 12 baskets with fragments from the 5 barley loaves, which were left over by those who had eaten. Therefore, when the people saw the sign which he had performed, they said, 'This is truly the prophet who is to come into the world.'" This morning we return to Galilee. As we have made our way through, are making our way through the 7 sign miracles, we have made our way from Galilee to Jerusalem and back and forth time and time again, making our way through Samaria, and though we have not stopped to consider those scriptures, yet John leads us north and south. Here we are once again in the north. We are on the other side of the Sea of Galilee, that sea which was also known as the Sea of Tiberias, the key freshwater lake in Israel. Well, here Jesus, he is in territory that you might remember was sometimes referred to as Galilee of the Gentiles. And it's interesting that Jesus pinpoints Philip, the man who very clearly bore a Greek name among all of the others of his disciples, he who bore a Greek name, to ask his question, "Where are we to buy bread that these may eat?" Jesus, time and time again, was needling his disciples. Sometimes in ways that they clearly understood, and sometimes in ways that completely passed by them, that Jesus had not only an interest for the covenant people of Israel, but that his gospel would go far beyond. The very fact that he included one who bore a Greek name among his 12 disciples was strong evidence that Jesus had no hesitation to reach out to those beyond the Jewish people. Others might have looked at Philip with deep questions in their minds. What in the world are you doing, compromising even by bearing a name which is not clearly Jewish? But here we are, some would say, on other people's turf. And we read that there was a large crowd. Now, 5,000 men. Some would bicker about, well, is that 5,000 males plus women and children? I think that that is the case that is being described here. Some would say that it's simply 5,000 in all. Whatever it is, it's a large gathering of people. And Philip, when he comes up with his quick calculation of 200 denarii, a denarius being a day's pay for a laborer, so essentially two-thirds of a year's wages would not be enough to pay for all the bread that would be needed to feed this crowd. Well, it was indeed a large crowd that we read followed him. Followed him. Now, the disciples also followed Jesus, and we read of others who followed him for a time and then fell away. It's one thing to follow a person, a master, a leader, but then to disown them when things get very difficult. I suspect that this large crowd was very half-hearted in their devotion to Jesus, and that they were tickled, they were fascinated by what we then read John saying, because they saw the signs which he was performing. Jesus was a bit of a circus act. He was the best entertainment that had come past town. And though Jesus was very peripatetic, he was very mobile in his ministry, there were people who said, that was so amazing, I want to catch up with it at the next place and the next and the next. And so these people were on the move, even as Jesus was. They wanted to see what amazing thing he was going to work in the next place. They saw the signs. They saw the signs, but they didn't make the connection that the sign was to lead them on to something far greater. It was to lead them not to just say, that's amazing. How did he do that? But it was to lead them to the point of believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing that they might truly have life in his name. Well, Jesus comes to Galilee there and goes up on a mountain. He sits down with his disciples. And verse 4 might seem to be one of those verses that we could casually toss aside and possibly think, would we lose anything whatsoever if we were to extract verse 4? Did John, as he wrote his gospel account, have a momentary pause or a rabbit trail that he wanted to, or a tidbit of trivial information? It says, now the Passover, the feast of the Jews, was near. So what, John? So what if the Passover is near? The Passover had more to do with a gathering down in Jerusalem, and of course there is significance to that, but here you're talking about something that took place in Galilee. And then you'll talk about how that Jesus walked on the water. It'll be some time before we get to that account of how that Jesus would give his life a ransom. At that very point of the Jewish nation remembering the Passover so long before, and how that Jesus would be the greatest lamb ever sacrificed. Now the Passover, the feast of the Jews, was near. But we need to get ourselves into the shoes and into the cloaks of these people so long ago. What takes place when you go on a journey by car or by foot? You pack some food along with you. You start to think, well, I'm going away for a while. How will I feed myself? Where will I get sustenance? The Feast of the Jews, where so many of the people would, in obedience to the Old Testament command, gather down in Jerusalem, here these people in Galilee, they would be thinking, we've got to pack, we've got to plan, we've got to strategize. We can't go without for all of those days, or we'll be left fainting on the side of the road. So John just tosses this in, and he says, here these people, you would have expected them to have been preparing for a time of travel, for a time when they would need to be taking food with them. But here you have a whole gathering of people who come to Jesus and they are without. They are lacking. They have not had the forethought, the foresight to be ready for what was on ahead. And Jesus, he lifts up his eyes and he sees this large crowd coming to him, and he sees more than just faces and hands and arms and bodies. He sees people who need to be ministered to. He sees people who are desperately wayward, both in their souls and in their bodies. And he wants to minister to them. He wants to bring blessing to them. But he also wants to instruct his disciples. He also wants to pour into them. And so to Philip, as I said, he says to him, where are we to buy bread so that these may eat? To test him, to see what Philip would have to say. But Jesus already knew. He wasn't looking for ideas. He says, look, we need to brainstorm. What are we going to do? Jesus knew. Now, Philip, we might beat up on him as a man of little faith. But I think that Philip was someone with a quick calculator in his brain, and he scanned the situation and he gave a very realistic response. You can ask one Philip, what are we to do? And they would say, the situation is hopeless. There is no answer whatsoever for this. It's a catastrophe in the making. But the second Philip would say, you're right. We need a huge supply, and I can hardly wait to see what the master is going to do. The one responds without faith. The second responds with faith. Very much like the spies who were sent down to scout out Israel when the people were coming under Moses' leadership. The spies were sent out to see, is the land a good land? And they came back with a report, oh, it's an amazing land. But some of them said, it's a catastrophe in the making. We cannot take this good land. The fortifications are too strong. But Joshua and Caleb, they came back and they said, yes, indeed, it is a good land. And the fortifications are strong. And there are giants in the land. And God is going to do a great work in giving us the land. Well, here, Philip, in his quick calculations, I'm not at all sure that he was speaking without faith. He was just saying what the situation was. And we are indebted to him because he gives us a sense of how big a pile of food would be needed for each of these people, he says, to get just a little bit. This wasn't going to be a five-course meal at a fancy restaurant. This was just to be a little bit to each one. Andrew enters the scene. Simon's brother, he says, there's a kid here, a lad, a boy. He's got 5 barley loaves. Now, I think you need to extract out of your thinking what you're thinking of is, you know, a nice big loaf. These were probably small buns of some kind. Hard to think of a lad carrying 5 barley loaves unless he was delivering them to someone. But these were probably just a lunch that had been packed for him or that he had packed as he set out on the day. Here this lad had more foresight than anyone else in that crowd who came empty-handed. 5 little buns. And the 2 fish, these weren't whoppers like you might get out of the freezer section of your grocery store. These were probably shrimpy, tiny little things, such as they would yank out of the Sea of Galilee. There's a lad here. He's anonymous, as so many of the people in John's gospel are. People who simply came to Jesus, and they remind us that it doesn't matter whether you're old or young, mighty or puny, it doesn't matter who you are. If you come to Jesus, amazing things happen. A lad here who has 5 barley loaves, 2 fish, but Andrew also chimes in and he says, "What are these for so many?" And Jesus steps up. "Have the people sit down." Yes, there was much grass that at that time, and there still is. Beautiful, expansive countryside in Galilee today. And they sat down, 5,000 in number. Jesus took these buns, and he gave thanks, and he distributed to those who were seated the fish in like manner, as much as they wanted. Now, let's back up just a moment and consider the other sign miracles that Jesus had effected or that he was yet to effect. We've considered the changing of the water into wine in John chapter 2 and how that Jesus showed his mastery over quality there. But you will remember that that was a miracle that was almost completely done in silence or on the side. Mighty few people understood, though the disciples, discerning what had taken place, we read, believed in him. Then in John chapter 4, verse 46, we have the healing of the nobleman's son. And Jesus shows his mastery over distance or space. A distance of some 20 miles, Jesus heals the boy from that great distance. John chapter 5, we have the healing of the lame man by the pool there in Jerusalem. And Jesus shows that even though that man had been there for 38 years, yet Jesus is the master of time. But with the nobleman's son in John chapter 4, likely very few people knew of that. Jesus wasn't there personally, and we have no indication that he later showed up to take credit for that miracle. It simply happened, and the nobleman believed in Jesus. There in Jerusalem, the healing by the pool, Jesus did not gather a large crowd, though there were some who saw the man and wondered what had taken place and heard the great story. But now here, for the first time, we have one of Jesus' signs as he demonstrates himself the master of quantity. 5,000 men, women, children, too. Jesus all of a sudden works a wonder. And these people, they are ready to rise up and they are ready to grab him and forcefully make him their king. Later on, Jesus would walk on the water, but it was just his disciples who saw that and who fell down in the boat and worshiped him as they welcomed him in. Also, later on, Jesus would heal a man who was born blind, and there would be great contention as he shows himself as the master of misfortune. There, he would later raise Lazarus from the dead, and of course, you can't keep that quiet. But here, perhaps the most amazing miracle of the 7 that John records, here we have a bit of a problem brewing because so many people who were there, not all for the best of reasons, they were eager to gather and to grab Jesus as Jesus says, gather up the leftover fragments so that nothing will be lost. They gathered them up, and the people were amazed that out of those 5 barley loaves, all of a sudden, somehow they filled 12 baskets with just the fragments. How can that be? The people, when they saw the sign which he had just performed, now they had already seen him do other things, but this was the stamp of approval. This was the final word in their thoughts. They said, truly, this is the prophet who is to come into the world. And Jesus needed to slip away by stealth to be by himself alone. Otherwise, verse 15 tells us that they were intending to come and take him by force and make him a king. But that kingship would have been beneath him. He would have been king over a certain bit of terra firma, over a bit of political geography, but it would have been utterly beneath him. You see, Jesus came to feed the soul, and by feeding the bodies, he was indicating that he was more than able to meet the needs of hungry hearts. Jesus came that these people might have far more. And unfortunately, this large crowd who followed him because they were dazzled by the signs, they were missing horribly the very reason why Jesus came. Why have you come to church today? Is it to sing some songs that you have enjoyed all your life long? Is it to be among other people who live a decent life, a moral life? Is it to be among those who call you friend? Or is it because you have a hungry heart and because you want to know the Lord who is able to minister to your heart from deep within? There have been many who have come to church because it's been the best show in town. It's been something to ease the boredom. It's been like a large crowd of Jesus' time following after him because it did something for them, but they were not prepared to surrender their lives to Jesus Christ. Where was this crowd of 5,000 later on when Jesus would speak difficult words? They were there to see what Jesus did, but they didn't want to have anything to do with what Jesus claimed to be or what he demanded of them, that they take up their cross and follow him. Where was the crowd when those others in Jerusalem were crying out for his blood? Where were those who would bear witness that this man did such marvelous things? It's easy to drift away. It's easy to become disillusioned. It's easy to become entranced by a new show in town. At a recent conference of pastors, there was a saying which was shared more than once. If you don't start for the applause, you won't quit for the criticism. That was a word specifically for pastors and for church leaders. Sometimes there's lots of criticism, but the word is, what was your starting point? If you didn't start for the applause, then you won't quit because of the criticism. Now let me change that a little bit. Why did you start with Jesus Christ? And when you come to any point of wanting to pack it in or to let it quietly drift away, why did you start? If you did not start simply because Jesus was the best offering, because he was the best show, because it was the most entertaining part, that you could find, thing that you could find, then you won't drift away because Jesus has somehow lost his attraction. But you'll hold steady. We are going to sing as we conclude this morning, "Have You Any Room for Jesus?"